Time now for Connecting the Diocese. Connecting the Diocese is a production of the Diocese of La Crosse.
One of the most oft-quoted quotes of St. Francis, preach the gospel all time and occasionally use words. The whole idea is that you preach by your life, preach by how you live, you preach by what you do, how you behave. Those sorts of things are so important.
Well, thank you so much for tuning in Connecting the Diocese. My name is Jack Socha, your host for this show, again from the Diocese of La Crosse Communications Department. I don't know where you are right now, and I don't know where you have been this past week, but it has been cold right here. The kind of cold where I don't even go out and check the mail. I mean, it's been that cold. It isn't like we've got a half-mile driveway, but it's long enough where you get down there, and by the time you start working your way back, you kind of wonder whether it was worth getting to the mailbox to get the latest Eddie Bauer catalog, which, by the way, this time of year is advertising swimsuits for all those of you who are going to go to the Bahamas or down to Cancun or someplace warm as opposed to where we are right now. The nearest I get to going to someplace warm like that is buying bananas over at Quick Trip. But we did live in Texas for several years, even though it's been more than 30 years since we've been back up here. And I must admit, this time of year, we try real hard to remember all the stuff that caused us to leave Texas, as opposed to all of the stuff that was nice this time of year. But anyway, we like it where we are, and we're not moving back down. It's perfectly fine here. I just turn up the thermostat a bit more and wait for things to get better. We're working our way through January. Another reason, of course, we're not getting out much is because of the Omicron version of the COVID-19 virus. We're just staying around. We're fully vaccinated and have boosters. But at the same time, we're hearing about breakthrough things and the possibility that by the time you hear this, we are beginning to see the so-called peak situation. It's really very strange. It's almost like just following a math graph. You know, 3 weeks after Thanksgiving, boom, there was a surge. 3 weeks after Christmas, boom, there was a surge. 3 weeks after New Year's, boom, there was a surge. It's just plain the way it works. And so we are just staying at home and not doing a whole lot. And when we do go out, we are wearing masks. We are upgrading our masks. We were not wearing cloth ones. We were wearing some halfway decent ones, but we are getting some of the better ones. And I do believe that the government is going to be sending out some of the really best masks as well, which I do advise you to take a look at. Every time I go look at some local newspapers online, and they frequently have the sports results, the local high school basketball games and things like that, and they've got pictures. And it just astounds me that there's a whole bunch of people in that little gymnasium with their masks not on or hanging down around their neck while they're shouting or with their nose hanging over the mask. And if you're not going to wear the mask properly, you probably are wasting your time even having it. But you really should be doing that because this stuff is really serious. It's really getting out there and it could peak very, very soon. Coming up in this hour, we're going to be talking with Melissa Bovey from Catholic Charities about adoption, a whole bunch of stuff that I did not know about the process of adopting. Things have changed dramatically over the past several years. But first, the other reason that we're not getting out much is that, a possum got into the garage, and he seemed to find a way of getting underneath the car and not getting out. And he's finally gone. We had a warm-up earlier this week for a day, and we managed to get the little possum to leave. Did some research on possums. They are marsupials, and you've often heard the story about a possum playing dead. They really do that. It was really funny. The first time I spotted it, I had just gone into the garage, and it must have gotten scared and was just like lying there like it was dead. And my first thought was, oh my gosh, a dead possum. Wow. So I was going to go get a shovel or something to kind of lift it up and take it outside. And I got back, and it wasn't there anymore. It was plague possum. And also, I did more research on this. Not only do possums play dead, which apparently they've evolved to do, and it keeps them from getting eaten, they also even change their facial expression into what they call a rictus, where their lips are pulled back, kind of like, I'm dead. And then in extreme cases where they think that playing dead doesn't work and having your face, with your teeth hanging out going like, I'm really dead now, folks. If that doesn't work, they also have the capability in extreme circumstances of putting out a stench that is somewhat like something that's been dead for several days. So That's pretty evolved. I mean, not only do they lie there going, I'm dead, don't even bother with me. Look, see my face? It's pulled back. Yeah, I'm really dead now. And if that doesn't work here, take a sniff of this. Well, the weather did warm up for one day, and we were able to get the possum out. And there are outside shelters the possum can go in, so he's fine. We've even put food out for the little thing. But anyway, I decided to go into La Crosse to get some needed shopping done. I do most of my shopping locally, but there are certain things we simply cannot get in the local store. And so I go into one of the big, you know, employee-owned big supermarkets. I was thinking I'm going to get there in the morning before it gets busy, because again, I'm worried about crowds. Forgetting completely that this was the only day of the week where the weather was going to be even approaching decent, like 27 degrees. And obviously, everyone else in the greater La Crosse area took a look at the calendar and took a look at the date and checked the weather and got exactly the same conclusion. And that store was completely and totally packed. I mean, I was like Saturday night in La Crosse or something like that. But we got through, got the stuff we needed. There were very, very few shortages. I was just reading someplace that, you know, on an average week, there's maybe 89% of the shelves are filled. And on some occasion around some of the stores, you'll find 87%. Well, big deal. The only thing they were short of were brown pinto beans in the Hispanic section of the store. All they had was little one-pound bags. And the only other alternative was one, and they only had one left, one 25-pound bag of pinto beans. Now, we happen to eat a lot of pinto beans. We do a lot of plant-based cooking. So I just kind of gritted my teeth, and I bought the 25-pound sack of brown pinto beans. I'm sure they must think I'm some kind of prepper waiting for Armageddon or something like that. But it was a successful trip. Also, I noticed in this particular store, they have kind of a discount area where they put short-dated stuff. They still have gallons and gallons of hand sanitizer. And I think they've got them down to like, you know, 2 gallon bottles for a dollar or something like that. And this is the stuff with about 70% alcohol. So it's pretty good stuff. But we bought our gallon or so months ago. And, you know, because we don't go out so much, we've gone through it very, very slowly. But if you're out and about, you can look for some bargains on alcohol. You still got to keep doing that stuff. Got to keep washing your hands and taking care of yourself. Yeah, aside from that, and over the past several weeks, I've been gathering up stuff from my studio and the various rooms in the house to donate to charity, and my wife has been grabbing stuff too, and that's really filled up the back seat of the car to the point where I really had to get it out of here, and I did manage to get it donated. But aside from that, that's the excitement in our lives. There you go, sitting at home, complaining about the cold, and not going to go check the mail. And also, wondering if the possum could be caught. Boy, I'll tell you, it don't get no better than that. We'll be right back after this on Connecting the Diocese. Time now for a short news report from the Vatican Newsroom in Rome.
The Pope has joined his voice to those of bishops across North and South America to urge people to get jabbed against COVID-19. In a video message produced in conjunction with the Ad Council, Pope Francis praised the work of researchers and scientists in producing safe and effective COVID-19 vaccines.
Gracias a Dios y el trabajo de muchos, hoy tenemos vacunas para protegernos.
He added that vaccines bring hope to end the pandemic, but only if they're available to all and if we collaborate with one another. Pope Francis went on to say that getting a COVID jab that is authorized by the respective authorities is an act of love. Helping others do the same, he said, is also an act of love.
Amor a uno mismo, amor a los familiares.
Love for oneself, love for our families and friends, and love for all peoples, he said. Love, he added, is also social and political. The Pope noted that social and political love is built up through small individual gestures capable of transforming and improving societies. Getting vaccinated is a simple yet profound way to care for one another, especially the most vulnerable, he said. Pope Francis then prayed to God that each one of us can make his or her own small gesture of love.
Por más pequeño que sea, el amor siempre es grande.
No matter how small, love is always grand, he said. Small gestures for a better future. The Pope was joined in the video by several church leaders from across the Americas. Archbishop Jose Gomez of Los Angeles lamented the suffering and death the pandemic has wrought across the globe. He prayed that God might grant us the grace to face it with the strength of faith, ensuring that vaccines are available for all so that we can all get immunized. Mexican Cardinal Carlos Aguirretes linked COVID-19 jabs to a better future for all, while Honduran Cardinal Rodriguez Maradiaga said the world has much to learn from the coronavirus. But one thing is certain, he added, the authorized vaccines are effective and are here to save lives, calling them the key to a path of personal and universal healing. I'm Devin Watkins.
Again, thank you so much for tuning in, Connecting the Diocese. We're going to get to Melissa in just a moment from Catholic Charities. But speaking of Catholic Charities, and this is something mostly of interest to the folks in the Diocese of La Crosse, but it is important that we now mourn the passing of Deacon Richard Sage, who for quite a number of years was the director of Catholic Charities. I knew him tangentially, I believe is the word. I worked with him on some things and interviewed him and things like that. But, easily 10 years ago, if not longer, there was a horrendous rainstorm, big time, in the greater La Crosse area, in the Diocese of La Crosse, for that matter. And it caused very, very, very serious flooding to the point where some houses were literally slipping off hills and total damage going on. And before even FEMA got there to help out, Catholic Charities was there, and Deacon Richard Sage was out there. The rain hadn't even stopped yet, practically, and he was out there literally holding a prayer card in one hand and a gift card in the other, so people would get a little bit of comfort and a little bit of supplies they needed from Catholic Charities. And so when I heard he passed away, that is the story, that is the image of Deacon Sage that I will forever carry in my mind and heart. Him there holding a prayer card in one hand and a gift card in the other. Deacon Richard Sage, rest in peace. Well, as promised, I do want to bring on for the first time Melissa Bovey from Catholic Charities. And you, what is your title, Melissa? I should probably ask you that as well.
Director of Family Services.
Director of Family Services, and welcome to the show, number one. Good to have you on. I wanted to get you on. I talked with the folks over at Catholic Charities about what is going on in the world of adoptions, and they said you are the go-to person for that. And so how long have you been doing this?
I have been with Catholic Charities for 18 and a half years.
So you have been through all kinds of good stuff. Before we get going on this, and there's an awful lot of interesting stuff going on in the world of adoptions, and a lot of people probably have an antiquated view of it, but we should also mention that earlier this week, there was the wake and the funeral for Deacon Richard Sage. And I had already mentioned him at the beginning of the show, but obviously, if you've been there for 18 and a half years, you have worked with him as well. Do you have any particular memories or things you wanted to express about Deacon?
Yes. Deacon Richard Sage was a phenomenal person. I had the privilege of working with him for the entire time he was at Catholic Charities, and he was instrumental in growing the adoption program. He would come up to Eau Claire, I'm based out of Eau Claire, and he would come in my office and sit in my chair and he'd go, "Okay, kid, what are we going to do?" And he always challenged me to think about the bigger picture. You know, what can we do to grow the program? There are kids out there that need us. What can we do? He always had a smile. He always had a twinkle in his eye. He was just a servant leader through and through. And I considered him not only a mentor, but a friend, and I will greatly miss him.
Fair enough. My connections with him were much more tenuous, but I do remember him well. I did not want to let the time goes by without mentioning this in a timely manner, so that's very good. But good things to say. Yeah, it did sound like he really got things off the ground, and we're very fortunate that after he was moving on to other things, that Roberto took over and has done a pretty admirable job of filling some pretty big shoes.
He had some very big shoes to fill.
But you guys do a lot of work. We haven't spent as much time talking about adoptions as we have about all the other programs that go on, including now the refugee programs at Fort McCoy and everything else. And we're closing in. It isn't time yet, but the power connections that get cut off in April, but although there is the fund being built up for that particular time as well. When it comes to adoptions, Wisconsin has a long history of trying to find homes for kids who need them. And I was remembering reading something years ago about something called the Wisconsin Orphan Trains. And this was a long time ago where they were trying to get kids out of really bad urban settings And I don't know whether it had something to do with kids who were orphaned because of the pandemic back then or what was going on, but they actually put them on trains and had them come out to rural Wisconsin where various families would adopt them. In some cases, they would adopt more than one. Pretty remarkable that it's not as casual or dramatic. where it isn't Orphans Are Us anymore. It doesn't work that way. How do you, this doesn't sound like a dumb question, but how do you define an orphan? Is it a, go ahead, you tell me.
Well, so we really don't define kids as orphans anymore except in international adoption. And they truly are orphans. They do not have parents. They are in orphanages or foster care settings in other countries. Here in the United States, it truly is typically a birth mother and or birth father who decide for whatever reason they can't parent this child and they make an adoption plan.
There are certain countries, for example, you know, La Crosse has Casa Hogar down in Peru, and they take care of a lot of kids who are in exactly the same situation. They do not,
yes.
Peru does not do international adoptions, and that's more of the roadmap of things you have to deal with all the time. Before we get into that, let me ask you, where are you from originally?
I was born and raised in Triple Falls. I grew up on a farm and attended McDonald Central High School, graduated from there, left the area for about 10, 15 years, and have ventured back, and my home and my children, we live in Chippewa.
Chippewa, yes, I know it well from my radio days in that part of the world. Yeah. How did you get into the business of working to get children homes?
It's been a journey. I started out at I went to college and got my degree and my master's degree, and I always wanted to work with kids. After college, I worked with a program, Chippewa, actually, and I worked with pregnant young moms. Was there for about 7-8 years and really tried to help them become better parents, got them resources, you know, really just tried to strengthen their family core. And an opportunity came available at Catholic Charities to be an adoption social worker. Came here, and within a year, the director who was running the adoption program at that time said that she was getting ready to retire. Here you go. So for the last 17 and a half years, I basically have been running the adoption programs at Catholic Charities.
And if they had told you back when you were graduating from school in Chippewa you'd be doing this, what would you have said to them?
It would be my dream job. It truly, every day is a new, something new. My staff and I joke, you can't make this stuff up. But, you know, it's always something new. When I leave work at night, I know that I made an impact on someone's life today.
I'm glad you mentioned that because we're going to be talking a lot in this hour, you know, about the process. I mean, what people need to understand. But I have the very fortunate situation where I married into a very, very nice local family from the Owen Withy area.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my wife's aunts was, for whatever reason, unable to have children. And, you know, she and her husband decided to adopt. And they adopted a baby that was, again, like you say, a teenage girl, gave it up. And I remember them, you know, meeting them when this guy was a teenager. And also, you know, I went to his wedding. He's now, you know, been married 30 odd years. They have, you know, two sons who are 20 something years old, going to college and working. His life has been good. He has been raised as a great guy. His beautiful wife is fantastic. The kids are wonderful. All this happened, the end result of all this happened because this one aunt took the step to adopt somebody.
Yep.
And so when we talk about the process, it sounds somewhat mechanical, but I managed to see the result. And the result is you couldn't ask for nicer relatives. You couldn't ask for nicer people. They're just unbelievable. You know, it turned out so well. It just warms your heart.
Yes.
It just warms your heart completely. So you're very fortunate. You get to see the results, too, a lot of times. But how much has the last time I had, you know, people on from your organization talking, rules were changing. The international scene, they keep changing rules and opening and closing stuff. And what is the current state of adoption? How difficult is it these days? How easy is it? How expensive is it? Maybe you can give us an outline.
Sure. Adoption has really changed over the years. I mean, in the 18 and a half years I've been doing it, it's a completely different world. The idea of a high schooler getting pregnant, making an adoption plan, is pretty non-existent today. Our birth moms who are making adoption plans nowadays, sometimes they have two or three kids. The median age of our birth moms are 26 years old. They're coming from situations, whether it be, it could be a domestic violence situation, it could be drugs, alcohol, mental health issues, poverty, whatever it may be, they cannot parent that child at this time. And our role is to really support them through the process. And it's a very difficult decision. My utmost respect goes to women who ultimately make that decision because it's the most loving choice that they can make for their child at that time. Adoptions nowadays are considered open adoptions, and I know that's scary to a lot of people because they think of it as co-parenting, but it truly is not. We have found through research and over the years, kids that are adopted have questions about their genetics, about where they came from, their family, their birth, and we feel it's important that those children have that opportunity to have those questions answered. And so our families that are adopting nowadays typically agree to having some contact with the birth parents ongoing, whether it be pictures, letters. Sometimes we have, they may have a visit during the year, whatever it may be, whatever is comfortable to the two parties involved. And we just find that that's really beneficial for our kids because our kids grow up knowing from little up that they have basically two sets of parents. They have a birth parent, and then they have mom and dad. Some of our kids, they relish in that. They'll be like, yeah, I'm lucky I have two parents. And it really works out best for our families. Not all scenarios happen like that, of course. Sometimes birth moms, it's too hard to have that ongoing contact. And so as soon as they give birth and their rights are terminated, they, for lack of a better term, kind of go away. But, yeah, domestic adoptions are about 50% of what we do. International adoptions is about the other 50%. Right now, with COVID, our international adoptions have slowed down. We have many families waiting to get their children home. But because of the restrictions with COVID, that's not happening. Of course, there's a lot of frustration with that, but because parents want to get their children home as fast as they can. But hopefully this year, we can get some of our kiddos home. Right now, we have approximately 20 to 23 kids that are waiting to come home to the United States to be with their family. As far as domestic goes, it continues to be busy. We are always having families applying. We have several different programs. One of the big things in domestic adoption that has changed over the years is social media and the internet. In the past, birth moms would come into an adoption agency and we literally would pull out books of families and they would look at them and choose a family to meet. Nowadays, most of our families are meeting through social media or on the internet. And so we support our families and kind of guide them through that because that's a scary process because you may be getting contacted by a birth mom from across the country, and adoption has had some scams. The scams are very publicized, which is too bad, but we have people out there who are trying to make money off of people's emotion and want of a child. And so we help our families try to maneuver that process.
Well, like so many other charitable things that are out there, there always are groups that or people that try to basically, they're con artists and try to tap into something. You know, whenever there's a disaster, it's amazing the number of things that come up that are solicitations for organizations that either spend most of their money raising money or simply are totally false. And when you've got someone who is really heart aching to adopt a child and they think that the process is going too slowly or whatever the case, you know, whatever roadblocks there are because of COVID or whatever, there could be someone who thinks that they can give them a quick fix. And the object of the game here is you want to deal with Catholic Charities or a legitimate adoption organization, not somebody who has a P.O. box in Miami.
Right.
Now, getting back to the open adoption, number one, this is, I think, a delightful thing for the children because the last thing you want is for some poor kid to say, my mom didn't want me. This is not the case in so many cases. They would love to have the child, but they also want the best for the child. Now, you say that the mother who is going to be giving up the child for adoption does have a choice of an open adoption or no contact. Do the adoptive parents have a similar choice?
Catholic Charities is an open adoption agency. So any family who's coming to us for domestic adoption agrees to some level of openness.
Okay.
we view ourselves as being the advocate for the child. For us, the person in the triad, so the triad consists of the birth parent, the adoptive parent, and the child is the one really who doesn't have a voice. And so we feel that our role is to really advocate for the child. And so we strive to make sure that, of course, the child's placed in a good home, stable home. The birth parent gets the services that she needs, or she or he needs. And then the child has the best start that they possibly can. And so part of that is that whole openness piece and educating everyone involved about how important that is for that child as he or she grows.
And this would be quite a bit different from the situation that that my in-law relative would have experienced than 30-odd years ago.
Very different.
Yeah, it's more, what's the word? I hate to use the word holistic because that word is used so much, but you have to imagine, and that's all I can do in this situation, an average child who gets adopted at some point in their life is going to start asking questions. And it can be a tortuous trip to try to track down stuff, especially if it's been many, many years. You know, in my case, my mother had remarried, and they kept that information away from me, thinking it was somehow going to like shock me. It was almost like, why were we hiding this from this kid? You know,
right?
But
and the way we look at it is that it's the child's story. I mean, I know my birth story. I know the family I grew up in. I mean, we have memories, and I know my cousins and that kind of thing. And to us, it's important that that child has ownership of his or her story. And whether it's answering the question as to why didn't my birth parents, weren't they able to parent me at that time? What we find a lot with kids is they're very curious about siblings. They want to know if they have birth siblings somewhere out there. And again, if you have an open adoption, it's really easy to know, I have a brother and sister with my birth parents. And they like to have that ability to have a relationship with their siblings.
From a timeline point of view, a person comes to you and says, we are interested in adopting. If you can zoom ahead to the day where the adoption is done and the child is placed in the home, on average, I realize this is all different, how long does it take?
Well, domestically, there's so many variables that come into play. Like I said, social media plays an important role in the internet in this. But when we have families who truly embrace that, I've had families who have been matched and had a child within 4 months. And I've had some families who have waited years. It truly just depends upon activity level of the family. Catholic Charities, of course, does an extensive marketing program trying to work with birth parents to help them make an adoption plan if that's what they choose. But the more that the adoptive family want a child in their home and the more effort that they put into it, the quicker that that occurs. What I mean by that is I had one family who they designed t-shirts that said, we're adopting. And it was kind of a fundraiser for them too. They had family and friends who bought the t-shirts, wore the t-shirts. Somebody actually saw the t-shirt who was expecting. They called the number on the that they saw on the t-shirt, and an adoption occurred. I've had families who have done Facebook posts. I had one family whose post went viral, and within 3 days of them putting it on Facebook, they had three birth moms reach out. The really cool thing about this is that they not only were matched with a birth mom, but the state of Wisconsin requires education, that you complete a certain number of hours of education before your home study is completed on adoption and aspects surrounding an adoption. And so two of the people that they had attended class with also got matched with birth moms. So there's no rhyme or reason or a specific timeline that I can give you. International is a little more concrete. Every country has a different timeline. Some it's within 9 months, some it's within 2 to 3 years. It truly just depends.
Sure. Now, another question. Now, when I was a kid, we used to drive past this building that was an orphanage. Are there still orphanages now?
In the United States, there are nothing, quote unquote, called an orphanage. It's gone now to a foster care system, and children are placed in foster care who, for whatever reason, if they end up in the system, they're placed in a foster home. versus an orphanage. Like I said before, international, there are still orphanages per se, but here in the United States, there is not.
Interesting. Because, again, this is very, very old, and I was a kid, and so this is a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
Now, there also is a question about people, you know, they love the idea of a newborn, but what is the availability, or how does that work for parents who would like to get a child who's a little bit older, let's say a 10-year-old or something like that? How does that work?
Yeah, sure. The state of Wisconsin is called public adoption. Most of the children that are over the age of 1 year and come into the possibility of adoption through the foster care system. So whether it be they were removed from the home of their parents, or for whatever reason, mom and dad can't take care of them, and they end up going through the county into their foster care system. If they are, after a certain period of time, if they are eligible for adoption, public adoptions, which is funded and run by the state of Wisconsin, families can go through that program, and the kids tend to be older. Receiving a newborn in that program is pretty rare. Most of the kids are 3, 4 and older.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the avenue for families if they are looking or desiring an older child.
And I suppose, as usual, there's more demand for newborns, I suspect, at this point. People just, I guess, I don't know. I haven't been keeping track of these things. Are there more people looking to say, I only want a newborn? Okay.
Yeah, most people that come to us want newborns. The other avenue, if you want an older child, is international. Because most of the international children coming home are at least a year. And you can, of course, get them all the way through age 16. But it really depends on your family structure and what you're looking for. And that's part of the home study process. So after you apply for an adoption with Catholic Charities, and a social worker is assigned to your case, and they do an extensive interviewing process with the family and helps the family determine what is best for their family structure.
Yeah.
It might be a newborn. It might be, you know, a child that's older. If the child has some special needs, can that family accommodate the needs of that child?
Sure. Yeah, basically, you know, in any case, you are changing the trajectory of a child's life to a real nice way.
Correct.
And for some people, they may say, yeah, we want a newborn because we want to start from scratch. And other times, mm-hmm. you're essentially almost rescuing somebody from a trajectory that may have gone in a different way. And, you know, it's just either way, it's gorgeous. I haven't met and run across people who have adopted internationally and domestically. These kids, you know, nothing nicer than to see a kid who is happy and content and feels safe and loved, regardless of what their age is. It's just magnificent. And it's a big deal. It's got to take some special caring for parents. It's also, you know, there's a financial obligation. You're going to be raising this child. And it is, as they say around here, that costs money. But
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, and also, they don't just, you know, if you're just barely getting by, you know, already, and that does happen, you may not be eligible to adopt a child because you're not able to, mm-hmm. to financially handle it. What kind of fees are involved? And there's an awful lot of people hours to get this done, and there are costs involved.
It depends upon the type of adoption that you're doing. So for our in-state program at Catholic Charities, the average cost is about $14,000. And I know that's a big number, but our families, one of the things that we do to help our families is we have several different options available, such as grants that families can apply for. After their child is placed in their home, there is a tax credit that they can apply for when they file their return. There are different ways to help circumvent some of the fees. Like I said, that's our in-state program. I've had families who have completed their adoption and it's taken $40,000, $50,000. There are some states, and this is part of the role that we play. We're here to guide the family. And so we know there are some states out there that don't have a lot of laws and regulations surrounding adoption. So, for instance, there's a state where there is no cap on what a birth mother can receive in financial support. So if that birth mom resides in that state, we have families who may end up paying $30,000, $40,000 of living expenses for a birth mom.
I see.
Our job is to inform the family of that, to caution them against that. But if the family is willing to do that and they want to do that, that is their choice.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds very complicated. Are there new or changing regulations on interracial adoptions, things like that?
No. A lot of our families, like I mentioned before, they have to complete an education process. So a lot of our families, part of that education process is transracial adoption. A lot of our families are open to different races, and we encourage that if that is something that a family is interested in. It, of course, comes with very unique challenges, and that's part of the education to make sure that the family is aware and feel that they are capable of handling those special circumstances. But a lot of our families adopt children of different races, and our kiddos do really, really well.
I have seen numerous families who have adopted more than one child that have a real mix, and it is a blessing. I mean, it is gorgeous to behold, to watch these kids hanging out with each other. And, you know, it's just, he's my brother or she's my sister. This is my sister. It doesn't matter. You know, I mean, it's just they're family. They're just family. And you probably have, I have to ask you this now. Do you have any particular stories that just stick out in your mind when you look back over 18 years or so? Do you have any ones that you just go, oh yeah, whenever things are tough and everything is blowing up all around us because everything is busy, I remember this. Mm-hmm. Do you have any of those stories?
It's funny that you said that, because my one social worker, she came in and she was talking about a situation with a family, and I said, well, about 12 years ago, the same thing happened, and da 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 da. And she goes, how do you remember all this? You've worked with hundreds of families. And I'm like, I don't know. They just kind of stick in my head. I have a really unique family that I actually had the opportunity to travel with. They had a birth child, and he was a pastor of a church, and he and his wife just felt very compelled that they wanted to adopt. And they ended up adopting a little girl from Guatemala. And at the time, Catholic Charities was looking at expanding our international program, and so they invited me to go along with them. And I had the opportunity to go and really see firsthand this family when this little girl was brought into the hotel to them, the joy and the excitement and the tears and just the wonderful feeling that this little girl now is in their arms. And about 3 years after that, after their little girl came home, the family decided that they wanted to adopt from Ethiopia. And the husband was not able to travel, and so the wife asked me to travel with her to Ethiopia. And so I was able to go with her when she was able to go pick up her son. And just wonderful experience both times of not only seeing the whole process in those various countries, but just really embracing and seeing the excitement and the love and when these parents receive their child. And so, yeah, that will always stand out.
It's just when you think about how, again, the trajectory of these children's lives change towards the great positive.
Yeah.
I don't know if you watched a lot of Christmas movies. We watched a bunch this past year because we were locked in here pretty much. But one of the ones, it was a made-for-TV thing, was Henry Winkler was in it, and it was called An American Christmas Carol. He played a guy who grew up, and he had grown up in an orphanage at the time. And anyway, to make a long story short, after he goes through his big Christmas morning revelations of being better, he goes to this orphanage, and he picks out this one kid that he's going to mentor. He's not going to adopt the kid because he's a single guy, but this kid reminded him of what he was like when he was an angry, tough kid. And he takes him to the furniture factory, and he hands the kid a penknife and a piece of wood. And he says, this is what you carve. And he says, you can take this piece of wood and you can make a chair leg out of it. You can make it the spoke of the wheel of a sailing ship to travel the world. It's whatever you want it to be. And they finally end the show with the music comes up. And here's Henry Winkler and this kid carving these little pieces of wood to make things. And it's the same. It's the same idea. You take these kids and they can end up being whatever they want to be. But all of a sudden their future is much broader and much brighter, which is just incredible. So you went to Ethiopia.
Yes, I was in Ethiopia.
Wow,
it was awesome.
Have you traveled to many other countries as well to get orphans?
Just Guatemala and Ethiopia.
Oh, just Guatemala.
Well, in Ethiopia, I will tell you, it truly was a life-changing trip because I was able to go tour different orphanages and see the kids in those settings. And there is definitely a need for families to adopt kids. Unfortunately, right now, Ethiopia is closed to international adoption, but there are so many kids in other countries that are in need of a home. Having said that, these kids also come with stories. And like you alluded to, they have come from really hard places. And so when the kids come home, they tend to have some struggles. They've gone through a lot of trauma in their life. And so these kids have struggle. And so you alluded to this too. It takes very unique people to be able to open their hearts and open their homes to our kids.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people out there willing to do it, but it's not always an easy process. And the one thing with Catholic Charities is we're kind of a full circle adoption program. So we start by working with, of course, births and then the adoption. But we also have a program that's called the Wisconsin Adoption and Permanency Support Program, which is a grant funded through the state of Wisconsin, and it's throughout the whole state of Wisconsin. And we help families after the adoption is finalized. So even if that child's been in your home 5-10 years, that program is there to offer you support. We have support groups. We have ongoing training. We have a therapist list. We have different resources for families that if they're looking for additional support after the adoption is finalized, that's the program for it.
It is extra work, and you have to have a heart for that kind of thing.
And our kids don't come and say, thank you for adopting me.
Right.
You know, they're kids. I actually had a family, they adopted a little one internationally, and he really struggled with the mom. He attached to the dad, but really struggled with mom in building that bond. And it took 2 years before that little boy gave mom a hug because of the trauma. We can only assume the trauma that he experienced in the orphanage. You know, his caretakers were probably women, and you know, we're just assuming different things, but she called and she said that was the best gift anyone could have ever given.
To get that hug.
And
It's amazing. You know, you know people. I grew up with people through grade school, high school, etc. And never, because I was a kid, you know, never asked them their background. And I was talking to this one school chum of mine. Now, she was born in 1948, and her parents came from Ukraine. And I never asked her about this. And she said, I was about, 6 months old, and my parents were escaping Ukraine, dodging bullets with me, you know, wrapped up in a blanket. You don't know the things that people have gone through. Some of these kids who have been in war zones, and some of these kids where there have been child soldiers, they see stuff that most of us would have a hard time ever getting rid of seeing. And they're just kids. So they got to work through it.
Right.
We're going to take a quick break. I want to come back to talk a bit more about some other ways that people can help out who are maybe not necessarily planning on adopting, but still can really help some other kids find the homes. So we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. We're talking with Melissa Bovee from Catholic Charities, who has been doing this for a lot of years and has a lot of stories. We'll be right back. The Diocese of La Crosse is 15,000 square miles, and the folks who operate the diocese, the Curia staff and your local priests try to reach every corner of the diocese to inform, to comfort, to help, to provide spiritual information in many different ways. Catholic Life magazine is one. This radio station is another. The video masses are another. YouTube videos are another. Online courses now available through the diocesan website are yet another. All these ways to try to keep in touch with you anytime, but especially during this time of the pandemic where you may be feeling isolated, alone, and in some cases even scared. Our bishop, our priests, our religious, our deacons, and all the folks who work for him in the Diocesan Center are working for you. I would ask that you support all this effort when you can with donations to the Diocesan Annual Appeal. Small donations, large donations, every little bit helps and every little bit is used efficiently. Part of that money will go out to help Catholic Charities do the wonderful things they're doing. Also, our missions department, everything you can think of. And of course, it goes back to the individual parishes as well who need a new roof repaired or some other work done or new computers or whatever the case may be. It all filters back to you. It is not locked away in a treasure box deep in the basement of the diocesan headquarters. So, in any way that you like, you could call the diocese and ask them how you can donate money. You can go to the website, diolc.org. And of course, you can contribute right in your parish when they pass the collection plate around. It all comes back to you in one form or another. And so many people are helped, and so many folks are working so hard to try to keep things wonderful for you. So thank you for all your support, and thank you for supporting the Bishop's Annual Appeal for the Diocese of La Crosse. Yeah, Melissa, thank you so much for being here. You know, these stories warm the heart that there are people out there who will allow a new person in their life, whether it be a baby or even a teenager, a kid who's 8 or 9, and it doesn't matter what they look like, it doesn't matter what color they are, cultural backgrounds they are. It's always delightful to hear. And by the way, what is the average family age that adopts? Any idea what that is? Are they in their 30s or 40s?
Start about early 30s to mid 30s.
Okay.
Of course, I've had people who have been in their early 20s knowing right away when they got married they were infertile, mm-hmm. and so they wanted to adopt right away. I've had couples who have gotten married later in life, so I've actually had couples in their late 50s who have adopted. It's the whole age range.
But when you get past a certain bracket, you know, when you're post-retirement, there's other ways you can help. If you can't, are not able to adopt a child, you know, an infant when you're 72 or something like that, but you would like to see more children adopted, you can contribute financially to Catholic Charities in general and specifically the adoption program so that you could offset some of the costs for some family who really has got a heart for adoption but just needs a little bit of help getting it done. How do you contact Catholic Charities to do that? I know what your website is. I've learned that from Roberto.
Yes. Yeah, you can donate through our website, or you can call Lady This Speaks To at Catholic Charities about donations. Is Callie Smith. She's located in our La Crosse office, and that number is 608-782-0710, or you can reach out to me in the Eau Claire office. My number is 715-832-6644, and yes, we are always looking for financial assistance. We actually have a couple of, like I mentioned before, scholarship funds for families who may financially be struggling. Another population of adopted parents that I just want to touch on are relative adoptions. Typically, those are grandparents who, for whatever reason, are adopting their grandchild. And so when you alluded to that 72-year-old who may not be adopting, we actually have 72-year-olds who are adopting their grandchildren.
Wow.
And so we are here to help with that as well. And we have a specific fund that can help grandparents with that, because we know at that point this is something very unexpected that they had occurred. And we don't want the financial cost of giving that child a permanent home to interfere with that.
That's really interesting. We have long heard about grandparents essentially babysitting and caring for their grandkids, but the fact that in some situations they actually adopt them legally. If you're a post-retirement age, and you'd like to help some of your fellow people in your age bracket in that situation, you could designate that. I want to give you the website, too. CC, as in Catholic Charities, LSE, as in La Crosse, .org. CC, LSE, www.thediocesepublic.org. And I guarantee you, if you call up their toll-free number, if you lose all the other phone numbers because you're driving in the car or whatever the case may be, if you just call up there and say, I'm interested in contributing some money and leave your phone number, they will call you back. I guarantee it. And you can say, I'm interested in adoptions, or I'm interested in helping out the homeless, or I'm interested in the power cutoffs. There's so many different things going on. But nonetheless, if one of these things we talked about has hit your hot button, and again, I just learned something, this grandparent adoption. I'm trying to understand, are there legal protections for the child for doing that? Or, I mean, why do they legally, are they trying to get the child in a safe environment? Or how does that work? Why are they adopting the child?
I've had a variety of reasons. We've had the death of the parent, and so the grandparent adopts the child. It could be for safety reasons. It could be they've had this child in their home for a number of years, and the birth parent just is like, I'm not interested in parenting, and they want to give the child a permanent home and that sense of security that if something were to happen, grandma and grandpa are always going to be there.
Interesting, yeah. And of course, now with the number of people who've died in the past year and a half with COVID-19, there could be parents whose children would never have dreamed that their parents would be gone, and so the grandparents could take care of them. And this all affords some legal protections, an avenue of inheritance, and all kinds of other things that get into the weeds on this whole thing. But I never thought about that. I really appreciate it. See, this is why I like doing this show, Melissa. I get to act like I'm smart because I learn things because I didn't know anything. That's wonderful.
Yeah. It's actually one of the highest growing areas in adoption. Grandparents, another reason around Western Wisconsin that grandparents are getting their children more is because of the meth people. And like we talked about, it's the safety, it's the security that child is going to be theirs to protect that child from whatever choices mom and dad may be making. Yeah, it's sad, and like I've had grandparents come in here in their mid-70s going, this is not what we had bargained for, but we love our grandchild, and we are going to make it work, and we want to adopt them.
There are a lot of good people out there, Melissa. You're one of them. And there's a lot of good people working at Catholic Charities. One thing we always mention when we're talking, especially with Roberto or Karen, a lot of the people who end up working with Catholic Charities, I mean to be either employed or volunteering, have had rough spots in their own lives. And they understand that, whether it be the power cutoffs that come up on April 15th or whatever, there's nothing like having somebody who's had their power cut off in some point in their life to understand that there's no shame in it.
Right.
There's people who come in for financial counseling. A person who, through no fault of their own, or perhaps because they get hooked on alcohol or drugs, is homeless. The thing that the Bishop Callahan said to me several years ago, and I swear I'm going to get this engraved in a little granite plate thing, a little desk thing, to give it to him and put one on my desk. No one is disposable. He said that to me, and that was like a lightning bolt. No one is disposable in their frailty or their errors or their circumstances they fell in, or just the fact that they were born and that their mom has difficult. They're not disposable, and so we take care of them. And you've got quite a job helping those people out. But again, if anybody wants any basic information, I would really suggest you go to ccclse.org or just go to the diocesan website. There's a toll-free number you can call, and they will direct you or get back to you. They're kind of busy right now because, like everything else, the demands are there. The staff is slightly reduced, and it's a jungle out there. But you've got the vines to hang on to, and so you're swinging around pretty good. But it's good. It really is good. I really enjoy talking to you about this. And as I tell all the folks from all the different agencies that I have on the show, if something urgent comes up or something exciting you want to share, whatever the case may be, if you get a hold of me by email or telephone on a Monday or a Tuesday or something like that, I can have it on the air that weekend, or a press release, or just whatever it is, just email me, because we'd like to get the information out as quickly as possible. It's very, very good. And we're here to serve you. This is the Bishop Show, and he wants this. This is what he wants, is to spread the good word. And boy, you got some good word out there today, Melissa. That's good stuff.
Well, thanks. Thank you for having me. This was awesome.
Well, you guys are the awesome ones. I'm just showing people what the awesomeness is out here. It's a good thing to be doing every week. So thank you for being here. Any final comments before we say goodbye to you for now?
No, just thank you for having me. And like you said, if you're interested in adoption or helping out, or if you are an adoptive parent and looking for additional resources, reach out to us, and we will definitely be here to assist and support you.
And if you are a person who is facing a pregnancy and you are considering having the child adopted, get hold of them as well. There's people who will listen at Catholic Charities. They will listen to you carefully, and that is really, really important. So, Melissa, thank you so much for being here. We'll talk to you again.
Okay, thank you.
Jack Socia here with you in the final few minutes of Connecting the Diocese from the Diocese of La Crosse. Happy that you have been here. Hope you enjoyed the show. Hope you learned a few things. I certainly did. I had no idea about the grandparent adoptions. I also was struck by the idea that being good and doing good takes a lot of work. It isn't like a made-for-TV movie where they snap their fingers like a Scrooge on Christmas morning and everything turns out wonderful. It takes a lot of hard work and a lot of patience, and I sure applaud all these people at Catholic Charities and all the other organizations who are helping people out and doing good. All the medical people, all the people working in hospitals right now who are just overburdened. Doing good is a lot of hard, hard work. And give these folks a little bit of a break, okay? Please do, because we're living in some pretty strange times. Was looking for some music to play, which I like to do at the end of the show. There are a lot of different tunes that are so-called adoption songs, and I went onto YouTube to look through them. I ended up going back, though, to the song that was written by the Hollies that used the theme from Boys Town, He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother. But I found a young lady named Emily Lind, early teenager. I think you'll enjoy hearing her rendition on the piano. She plays the piano and she sings. You can look her up on YouTube, Emily Lind. And she has a voice that is way beyond her young age. I will catch you again next week. And again, thanks for listening to Connecting the Diocese. While we're on the way.
and the load doesn't weigh me down at all. He ain't heavy, he's my brother. He's my brother.